This is Mandy.
And this is Leanne.
And you're listening to Two Blonde Sleuths. Today, I'm going to do another Mystery Monday because it is Monday. Well, when I put this out, it will be
not yet.
Tomorrow.
Yes. That means I have to get it out quick.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if you know about this, and I hope you don't.
I have not either.
Because I just heard about it, and I was very interested. And it's a true crime, kind of, but it's, to me, more of a mystery. So that's why I wanted to do it on the Mystery Monday.
Okay.
It's the mystery in Dorian Corey's closet.
Okay. Wait, say it again. It's all kind of wrong.
The mystery in Dorian Corey's closet.
Somebody's name is Dorian Corey.
You'll hear.
No, I'm just making sure I understand what you're saying.
Dorian
Corey.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's their name. Okay.
Yeah. Make sure I
Dorian.
Right. Dorian. Did I say that right?
I don't know. I think I can read that. Yes, you did.
Okay.
Now you made me like think up to it or something. I'm like,
no, it just kind of all like flowed. So I couldn't really tell where one word sort of ended and the other one began.
Yes.
It was very catchy.
Okay.
The mystery in Dorian Corey's closet.
Well, good. I'm glad I named it.
Twister.
I'm glad I named that. Okay. Something catchy. All right. Let me tell you a little about Dorian first, okay? Dorian Corey was born on June 6, 1937 in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, wow. This is old.
Yeah. Well, kind of. It actually happened in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
But that's when she was born.
Uh-huh.
She was born out of wedlock to Franklin Legg and Mary Fox Clark, which they later married in 1947 when she was 10.
Huh.
They married. So Dorian was born a male by the name Frederick Legg, but later decided she was a trans woman and changed her name to Dorian Corey.
Wait a minute. In the 40s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty crazy. Well, she didn't change her name until she was probably late teens, early 20s. So I would say she changed her name in the 50s. Early 60s.
And lived in the same town? Or just, I mean, yeah. I'm sorry, there's so many questions
right now.
And
that's so weird for back then.
Yeah, that's what makes, to me, her story interesting
and
cool. Because you didn't see that back then.
No.
Absolutely, you did not. She was raised on a farm in Buffalo, but would leave for the city and perform as a drag queen.
Okay.
Yeah, so in the 1950s, she finally moved to New York to study art at Parsons School of Design. That's where she graduated from. So, and I think after that, permanently lived in New York. She became a huge success as a drag queen and designer in New York in the 60s until her death in 1993. She was featured as herself in the 1990 documentary Paris is Burning.
Oh, right. I think that sounds familiar.
Yeah, 1990s, like I just said. But it's the film is about New York's 1980s drag scene.
Uh-huh.
And it focused on the real life of poor Black and Latino LGBT people. Drag was around, but she was a very, like a pioneer of the drag community. And New York is probably where it really started, honestly. So the film, Paris is Burning, it's not just about her, but she has a big part in the film.
Mm-hmm.
They interview her and... They would have what they call voguing balls. Like, I'm pretty sure Madonna copied them.
Drag queens.
Well, there was the Vogue magazine, obviously, too. But it was a ball, and they would have prizes for the drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I think, was one of the inventors of that. She really was a mentor to the young trans and drag community. And she started the House of Corey. So they would have houses, which to me, when I was reading about it, and they would eat. They still do. Yes.
Still do.
The House of Corey. And I think it was one of the first ones. I mean, we're talking in the 60s, 70s, 80s. So I'm sure she did. But the houses to me sounded like sorority houses. Mm-hmm. I heard in one podcast, it was kind of like gangs, but instead of doing bad things, you won prizes. And I was like, that's not really how I kind of saw it as like a sorority because
they call each other sisters.
Exactly. And that makes sense, yes. And I just kind of thought of it that way. But I know that a lot of times these transgender people there and drag queens, their families disown them.
Yeah.
And so these...
becomes their family.
It becomes their family, exactly. Yeah. And she had, on the House of Corey, she was the house mother. And she would mentor other mothers of the houses. She even had a clothing line of her own called House of Corey. Unfortunately, on August 29th, 1993... Corey died of AIDS-related complications in Manhattan at the age of 56.
Mm-hmm.
Corey's cremated remains were scattered in the waters off City Island, New York. And, yeah, that's how they did it, I guess. Right. Damn, I'm pretty sure that's illegal now. I was like, ooh. You can't spread ashes, and you're not supposed to spread them on, like, beaches and waters. And, yeah, it's like a public, you just don't tell anybody you're going to do it.
Right.
But if somebody knows about it, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do it. Corey was a wise and tough broad, some would say. You didn't mess with her.
No siblings?
No, it never said she had any siblings. Okay. She starred in these, like, cabaret shows. There were so many things that I guess I could have gone on and on about things that she did. In her short life, I mean, she was probably started this in her 20s and she died at 56, but she was definitely a very...
She lived a very cool life.
Yeah. She lived in Harlem.
Fun. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, they won prizes and did things like that. She had the clothing line, but I don't think she was necessarily... I don't think any of them were necessarily rich by any means. They didn't... She was a dress designer and seamstress, so she also designed dresses for, like, other drag queens. They said she had this one dress one time that, like... This cape opened up and filled the whole room. I was like, what? Like,
it was really cool.
It just seems like she was really, like, before her time.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being back then and all that happening? She was a legend in the trans and drag community. Corey had a saying or philosophy she was known for. Everybody wants to make an impression, some mark upon the world. You don't have to bend the whole world. I think it's better to just enjoy it. Pay your dues and just enjoy it. If you shoot an arrow and it goes really high, hooray for you.
All right. So this is where
the story takes a little bit of a turn.
Okay.
You ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. Dorian had a caretaker, one of her friends, Lewis Taylor, who was also a drag queen.
Uh-huh.
He helped her at the end of her life. She was sick, obviously.
Yeah.
And there wasn't, in 93, there wasn't AIDS treatment like there is now. It was a huge epidemic, obviously, in the 80s. And that's probably when she got it. And there was no medicine for it. So I'm sure she was sick for a while, and he helped her through all this. I don't think she had much. She just had this apartment, and she had a huge closet. And she told her caretaker, her friend, after her death, she said, just take whatever you want out of my closet. She had a fabulous wardrobe with a huge closet that was 30 years of collected fabulous gowns and things that she had made, beaded. Could you imagine? So the friend, just go in there and get whatever you want and then sell the rest and try to make some money, basically as payment for taking care of me and helping me and things like that. So a few months after Dorian died, Lewis and a couple of men were looking through her closet in her Harlem apartment, and they were actually looking for Halloween costumes. And they stumbled upon an older-looking green plaid garment bag. It was super heavy. Taylor, weighing only 135 pounds, could not lift the bag. One of them took a pair of scissors and cut it open, and that's when a horrible odor was released. Yeah. So they immediately called the police. They didn't even go anymore. I read somewhere that they thought it was a dead dog, which somebody was like, I would be so offended. Somebody on this podcast I was listening to, they were like, why wouldn't they just immediately think it's a body instead of a dog? So,
if you don't think, like, this person that you know,
they want to just keep the dog
dead body.
No, they did not think that at all. So they were absolutely shocked. And so the police came in, and this bag had multiple layers to it. It had a, like, faux leather layer, and it had plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So the detectives cut through all the layers, and they said there was, like, baking soda sprinkled on it.
Baking soda's a friggin' bag.
It was a garment bag, which you could have thought, okay, think about if she had a cape or a tent over practically half the roof or something.
Imagine what this garment bag. I mean,
I know.
Anyway, okay,
sorry. So detectives, after they cut all the layers, they revealed a mummified body inside the layers.
Okay.
It was in the fetal position, and it had the blue and white boxers on. Yeah. He had brown skin, which had turned purple and yellow. Yes. There was a gunshot in this person's head, right? So at this time, they don't know if it's a woman or a man. It also had something like these beer tabs, which I don't know if it helped seal it or what, but they just noticed that they were from the 60s and 70s. You know, the pool ones.
The old kind.
Yeah.
Sealed back.
And they only made those then. So they were like, okay.
Those are in the bag?
Yeah, it was, had something to do with, like, the way they had it closed, the way maybe, I didn't really understand it, but they just, it was closed very tight in several layers, and it had bacon soda. So I think that they were trying to not necessarily preserve the body, but prevent it from
smelling
because they were doing that. It, in turn, or whatever, it mummified it.
I just can't imagine that she wouldn't have been like, yeah, I'm on my way out. So, Lewis,
I know.
There's okay. a dead body in my closet.
Yeah, I know.
I need you to do something.
Yeah, lift it up. Do it. I think
anything.
You know what I think she thought? I'm on my way out and you can deal with it.
Deal with it. Good luck.
Somebody else can deal with it.
So, that's kind of a,
yeah.
And the face to Lewis that helped her all this time. Like, you seriously left me with a dead body?
A mummy. Mummy.
Or a good story. She left him with that, I guess.
I know. They managed to get a fingerprint from the body.
Uh-huh.
The body was identified as Robert, goes by Bobby, Worley, born in 1938. They had these prints because this is in 1993. Okay. And they had these prints because Bobby had a bad criminal record. He had been arrested for rape, assault. And from those charges, he only served 3 years for that crime in prison.
Nice.
Yep. And there was somebody said that his girlfriend, a girlfriend at one time broke up with him. And so he beat her 7-year-old son up.
Ugh.
Yeah. So this guy was like a real winner, mm-hmm. right? He was such a winner.
I don't feel so bad for Bobby.
No, you don't. His family had not even reported him missing. They said, yeah, I think because he was like such a troublemaker and they were just kind of like,
good riddance.
Yeah. It's,
he gone.
Yeah, and they said that the last time they saw him was in the late 60s.
Oh, God, like 30 years.
Yeah, so they think it at least happened 20-something years.
Yeah.
So not long after, around the time that he was last seen is what they're thinking. 20 years, and there's, it's just a couple weird things. Oh, but Corey did own a gun that was the same gun used.
Okay.
And, yeah. Okay, so then we're going to go on to the theories, which one more thing I'm going to point out. This was really strange to me. And this kind of threw a curveball. In 1988, she had moved apartments. So this bag,
she moved him with her, you think?
I think I do. In some of the theories, they were like, was the bag there when she moved there? No, that was
still,
no, that was not.
It didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't make any sense. So I absolutely think she moved it. Now, you've got to think about this, okay? This other person that was 135 pounds that couldn't lift the bag, Dorian in the Paris is Burning, I mean, and she was born a man, so she had a man strength, and she wasn't a small person.
Yeah.
She wasn't huge, but she wasn't small.
Right.
She was probably a lot stronger than you would think. So maybe a strong person, you put it on a cart. I mean, she's moving all her other closet belongings in 1988.
Yeah, and put him on a dolly.
You put him on a dolly and moved him to the apartment. Which, yeah, so these are some of the theories. So a couple of rumors were that there was a note that was with the body that said, I've shot this poor man in self-defense because he tried to rob me or something. There was more to it. But so that was a rumor. Actually, Taylor said, her friends, that he had given the note to the police and they said they never saw any note.
Okay.
So I don't know about that. Okay. And then also, actually, Taylor had said that Corey had written a short story once about a transgender woman who killed her lover after he browbeat her into having reassignment surgery. And then that one of the other theories was that she was covering up for someone else. You know, she took care of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that maybe they were getting abused or something and she took matters into her own hands. Now, his brother, when they interviewed him, he did say that once he called, he was a raging alcoholic as well. And that he called him up and that he thought he was talking to one of his girlfriends. And I want to say that his brother said he mentioned the name Dorian at one time.
So I wonder if that guy even knew that Dorian was a man.
Okay. So, yes, I think so, because what they're saying is the reassignment surgery.
Did they even do that then?
In the 90s? It was
I
guess they did. They said that Dorian did have breast implants and did take hormones, but I think she didn't want to have the surgery.
Yeah.
I think that maybe she has told somebody through the years, but think about this. A man that, so he's been hetero as long as
he's
not come out, right?
Right.
So they have a secret relationship,
mm-hmm.
and of course, he probably does want her to get the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's like he's conflicted. You know, am I gay? Am I not?
Yeah.
They have the surgery and then you don't feel like you're gay.
I don't know either.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's my theory. And I think that he was known to be abusive. He's known to be a rapist. And maybe they had a secret relationship at one time because none of her friends knew about him.
So what if, like, they met and he thought she was a woman and then found out the hard way that he was really a man and started beating on her and she killed him?
That's absolutely possible.
Because I don't think that's not unheard of. I think that happens.
Yeah, I mean, sure it happens.
The drag queen that I've seen could pass for a woman all day, every day, better than they could a man, for sure.
I think that my theory, that's possible, but I think because of her writing that short story about the lover wanting, mm-hmm. trying to pressure the transgender woman into having reassignment surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was, maybe that's what stemmed from the argument. So I think he knew.
Yeah.
I think. And I think it was more or less, absolutely,
then, since they did,
he did write the short story. And I think that it was self-defense because of his criminal history. But what was so sad is, could you really blame her? Okay, we're talking about in the, let's see, it had to be in the 70s, late 60s, a Black woman, a Black gay trans woman. Mm-hmm. Do you really think she thought the police were in Harlem, living trans man? Yes. Well, you know, she referred to herself as a woman, but at that point, but that's what she was, especially, I guess, if she hadn't had the reassignment surgery, even though you can refer to yourself as what you want, you know. But so, okay, she probably thought they weren't going to believe her.
Yeah, she probably thought, like, that's dead ass man in my closet, and then I'm going to die, and everybody's going to know
that I killed him.
I killed him.
Yeah.
And they said he was
tough. You didn't mess with Dorian.
Maybe she wanted to leave him there so that when it's all over, everybody know that Dorian took care of business.
Well, because they were like, why didn't she just throw him in the river or something? I think she was just scared and didn't know what to do.
Probably.
Yeah, well, when it happened, and then maybe later, they said she had, even when Paris is Burning was filmed, she had the whole film crew in her apartment.
With that dead man.
Yeah.
And
lots of people came over and got measured, got sized.
And it so is not that great. I think
there was like some formaldehyde or whatever. Is that, did you just say that? What?
Well, formaldehyde is
preserves. She could put lye in there.
It didn't say lye, but it did say something about some formaldehyde that was put in there too, and baking soda.
That's why I watched it was preserved and mummified.
Yeah, it was mummified. But I think that she was just scared. And obviously, for all these years, all these people have been in her apartment. Nobody suspected anything. She absolutely got away with it. And I think that if she moved it, she thought there's a possibility to get caught.
Yeah.
So I think that's why she never moved it. And obviously didn't preserve it.
Just didn't care. I killed him. He's in the closet. He's not bothering anybody anymore.
Just don't worry about it.
Yeah. I think that's
great. They couldn't tell, I guess, how long he had been in there because he was mummified.
Yeah, but which actually helped identify him because he would have just been bones. But
yeah.
I think that she was, somebody said on one of the podcasts I listened to, maybe she looked up how to, you know, how the mummies, how to mummify somebody.
And he has a library.
Again. Well, definitely, because it was not Google. Yes.
No.
Or look in the encyclopedia how the Egyptians mummified their bodies.
They're pretty proud of
El Dorian.
Well, I mean, she had zero history of violence,
mm-hmm.
even though they said he didn't cross her.
Even though she is a woman and that, you know, a trans man that is a woman,
she is still built like a man.
I think
she was tough.
Yeah.
You know, even though she was sweet,
you could not
be tough if you were a Black trans man in Harlem in the 50s and 60s. I don't think you could not be tough.
Could you imagine?
No, I can't.
I was also blown away, not about the mystery, the murder mystery, which is very interesting,
mm-hmm.
but I was more like fascinated with Dorian because of what you just said.
Yeah.
Because
that's a lot went through.
I just can't imagine.
I mean, think about it. Nobody even talked about being gay in the 90s. Could you imagine that?
Or not positively anyway.
No. Yeah. Could you imagine what she went through and how like
strong she was? And
I honestly, I think he was beating on her one day or probably had done it several times.
Like, that's it.
And she was like, that's it. I've had a bang.
Boom.
And she had a gun to protect herself, which she probably needed.
In Harlem.
Yeah.
And she was just too scared to call the police. And you know, the sad thing is.
And they would not. I mean, she was probably
right.
Yeah. They would have looked at her and said, I've got to go.
Like, probably because she was gay.
Yeah.
Because they thought that was.
They had to dress like a woman.
They didn't like any of it. So. I definitely think that that was the mystery, and that we solved the mystery of
Dorian Corey's closet.
I just cannot even imagine.
I mean, what if I died and you're cleaning out my camper, and then all of a sudden,
this big bag, and there's a dead man in it.
But I would be like, Leanne should have called the police, but self-defense, I love her, but she should have been. Let me tell you why.
I'd love to be stuck with this dead man in the bag.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's, there was not.
You have choices.
Yeah.
People wouldn't.
I don't think she did not, though. She didn't have
choices. She did not have a lot of choices.
And that is why she. And you know, I started thinking about how they said that, like, the Paris is Burning, but the film crew was in her house. Like, all these people.
I'm going to watch Paris is Burning now.
Yeah. All these people came over all the time. And you know what? I thought to myself, and then while she's dying on her deathbed, you know, I think to myself, she didn't say anything. I'm like, what if she just forgot?
But no, they're so.
Yeah. Like, she crosses over and says, oh.
I forgot to mention to Lewis that there's a dead man in the closet.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if you can take care of it.
Yes. He's resourceful.
He can find it a couple months later.
Oh, sorry, Lewis.
And poor thing, he had to call. He called the police immediately.
This is not me.
Not me.
No, I'm not. And they even actually did think that it might have been him. They were like, how did this body get in here? Did you do this? And things like that. And Lewis was like, that's when he's like, said, I'm 135 pounds. I could not lift this bag by myself to save my life. How could I have done this? Put this person in this bag.
You know, it ain't a bitty thing. 135 pounds.
Yeah.
Good thing. Registered that when you said it earlier.
I know. And that was just so interesting to me. And what a like pioneer of the trans community.
And a murder mystery all rolled into one.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, I gotta see if Leanne's out.
I don't know who that was, but I'm super interested now.
I know. It's more fun to surprise you. And if I got anything wrong, I'm sorry, because we are just two mom blonde sleuths that you know, just tell our opinion.
Do science.
Thanks. Yeah, for sure.
I don't think he got anything wrong.
You don't think so?
And yeah,
you should go watch it. I think
you did a job,
Arnie.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch it for sure. Because, you know, I love a drag show. I've been going to drag shows for
a long time. I know. There's so much
favorite thing.
For sure.
All right. Well, we'll be back with our regular scheduled episode.
And please go like, subscribe.
Wait.
Instagram, Facebook.
Follow. All on it.
twoblondesleuths@gmail.com.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.